Welcome to Indie Radio Garden. This week, highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
The first clip comes from WCNULP 102.5, Radio CATA, a Spanish radio station. Cathia Ramirez interview with Elizabeth Henderson about her book, Sharing the Harvest, A Citizen's Guide to Community-Supported Agriculture, and they deepen the unfairness of the marketing system and the prices of food produced by farms.
And in the book, you'll see me, in my book, Sharing the Harvest, in its translation into Spanish, there is a description of what would be a good for a Hispanic share. As one of the early CSA farmers was a woman who was trained at the training center in California. Maria Catalan was one of the earliest Chicano CSA farmers. And I had my son interview her for the book and find out what she put in shares for her members, who were mainly also Chicanos. Her farm is in near Salinas, California.
It's amazing how you just keep bringing up like all these things that lead up to the following questions that I had. So you wrote a book about this. Can you tell us a little bit about the book, maybe what influenced you to write it, and why do you think it's important to share with the wider community?
Well, doing a CSA is truly a benefit to a farmer, because you have a group of people who understand that it's important to buy from a local farm. So they're your supporters. And after you do it for a few years, you really build social capital with those people who appreciate the food that you're providing for them. And on my farm, people were able to come out to the farm with their families, with their children. Their children experienced serious work together with adults, and also delicious food that we could eat right off the tomato vine, or pick yourself, or eat a carrot that was a little dirty and wipe it off fresh out of the ground. So it seemed really important to help other farmers understand how to do CSA. And I learned to do it from a woman named Robin Van Enn, who was one of the people in the United States who brought the concept to farmers. She and some people that she got to know, who brought the ideas from Switzerland and Germany. And she wrote a short booklet on how to do a CSA called It's Not Just Vegetables. And she made a video about it. And lots of people asked her to turn it into a bigger book. So since she was my friend and she was having a hard time, I was able to find out from her that writing was really hard for her. And her son was a teenager and getting into trouble, so she was pretty distracted. So I offered to help her. And the way things turned out, she tragically died of asthma and poverty because she couldn't afford to get the ambulance to take her to the hospital. So I ended up doing most of the writing of the book, Sharing the Harvest, A Guide to Community-Supported Agriculture. And, you know, when she started it, doing CSA in 1986, there were just a couple farms. By the mid-90s, there were maybe 1,000 across the United States. And I think now there are probably around 8,000 farms in North America doing community-supported agriculture. So it's really helped a lot of farms to make a living as a farmer and provide healthy food for the people in their communities.
Yeah, and that's something that we're trying to try to build more consciousness about, like what I mentioned of like thinking about where the food comes from and realizing that there's local farmers that also are struggling, and like being able to purchase and have that direct farmer consumer relationship is beneficial to not, like you said, not just the farmer, but also the consumer, but the community as a whole, because then people are investing their money in their localities.
I know that you understand very well that farm workers are paid very poorly.
Yes.
Family scale farmers are also paid very poorly. The pricing system for food in this country is cheap food. Pay as little as possible. So the pressure goes down through the food chain, and the people at the bottom who do the work, the farmers and the farm workers, get the least. Because there are people making a lot of money off of food. It's just not us down at the bottom. So by building a community around the farm, you can get a fairer deal for both the farmer and the people who work on the farm. And it was thinking along those lines that got me involved with the Agricultural Justice Project, which has standards for fair payments for farmers and for fair wages and fair treatment of farm workers. So I've always been looking for ways to build community to support the people who are really doing the work.
Yeah, definitely. And then something that you just brought up was how unfair it is for local family farmers or still farmers and the farm workers. And one of the things that we try to also build consciousness around is that because of the conditions of farm workers, many have that ideology that the farmer is like the bad guy who's not like paying the farm worker enough. So like talking about like the big corporations and everything that's involved in the current like food system of what you said, creating more cheap food and cheap labor is the real problem here.
Exactly. And that's why I've become involved in the past few years with a campaign called From Disparity to Parity to try and transform the food system from one that is based on cheap food, cheap work, to one that pays farmers in a way that is fair, and that way the farmer can afford to pay the people who work on the farm fairly and also use the best practices, which are best for the earth, that are climate friendly and that help build carbon in the soil, which leads to healthy soil and much higher quality food. So From Disparity to Parity will take us back to the policy that was instituted during the 1930s to bring farms out of the Depression. So farms were going out of business and farmers were being evicted from their land because they couldn't pay their mortgages in the early 30s. And what they implemented was parity payments, that is price support, so that the farm prices were in line with the rest of the economy, and supply management, limiting the amount of food that was produced to the amount that was actually needed. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the land that wasn't used for crops had to go into conservation practices. And that's what helped end the Dust Bowl, because farmers were planting strips of cover crops and tree belts and things like that that reduced the loss of soil to erosion and the Dust Bowl. That is the kind of system we need to reinstitute to force people who are buying from farmers to pay parity prices, so that farmers can be good employers, pay living wages, and take care of the land at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. But it seems like there's still a lot to work on.
Well, there is. We need a huge movement of people who understand some of these things that farmers and farm workers can stop fighting one another and work together. I mean, there's really been a farm crisis that's been going on since the end of the 60s and accelerating through the 70s and hasn't stopped, with farms going out of business because farmers aren't paid enough to maintain a farm business. So many farmers have an off-farm job, and that's so that they can continue farming but make enough of a living to feed their family and have some health insurance. Farmers should be able to make a full living from their farm.
Right.
And the farm workers who work with them should be able to do that too.
So you briefly mentioned the Agricultural Justice Project. That's one of the initiatives to start to deal with some fair pricing for both farmers, but also like fair wages for farm workers. Are there any other initiatives that you've been part of that deal with these kinds of issues and addressing some of these issues?
Well, no, actually. Between working on behalf of organic agriculture and teaching younger farmers and developing policy that will support more farmers being able to do organic agriculture, and working on the Agricultural Justice Project, and then more recently the Disparity to Parity. That's more than full time, Katya.
Yes.
Those are the things I'm working on.
But you also are part of other spaces that are sort of talking about some of the issues already, like NOFA, right?
NOFA is the Northeast Organic Farming Association, and I'm the co-chair of the policy committee both in New York State and the interstate. So that's how I work a lot with people in New Jersey, as well as Vermont and Massachusetts and Connecticut, et cetera. But the issues that I talked about of the Agricultural Justice Project and fair standards for farm payments and for farm workers, as well as developing a parity system to replace the cheap food, those are the issues that I've been working on.
Thank you for sharing all that. And I'm sure, I mean, I know that you've been traveling to different places to sort of learn and, like, teach on some of the things that you've learned. Would you like to share maybe one thing, but, like, one thing that sort of, like, was eye-opening for you, if you could remember, like, that one moment?
Well, because I wrote a book about CSA, it's been translated into several different languages, and one of them is Chinese. Mm-hmm. So I was invited to Beijing to launch my book in Chinese. There's actually been more copies sold in China than in English in the United States.
Wow.
And the launch took place at a conference of Chinese CSA farmers. And luckily, they assigned someone to be my translator the whole time. And except for the fact that everybody was speaking in Spanish, in Chinese, I felt totally at home, Katya. The Chinese farming people and organizers, and there were some young chefs and people who were doing farmers markets, so much like the people that I work with here in the United States. I felt really at home.
The second audio comes from WRGULP, Germantown United CDC. From the show Neighborly Chats, the hosts David Juro interview Jane Ellis. She's the founder and coordinator of the Germantown Community Fridge. They speak about how the fridge was started and the generous support they receive from neighbors across Germantown.
You're listening to Neighborly Chats on WRGU LP 92.9 FM. Today's episode is a follow-up interview with the Germantown Fridge, in continuation of our series exploring mutual aid. I'm speaking with Jane Ellis, the founder and operator of both Germantown Fridges.
My name is Jane Ellis. I am the founder, I guess, founder and coordinator of the Germantown Community Fridge. I also am a fourth grade teacher at Green Street Friends School, which is the host location of one of the Germantown Community Fridges. We have one on Armet Street in front of Green Street Friends School. And then we have a second location on High Street, which is on the side of the First United Methodist Church of Germantown building.
First, Jane told me about how an Instagram post led to her founding the Germantown Fridge.
Yeah, so it was about last summer, it's like July, maybe late June. I was scrolling Instagram, I'll say that. And I saw a fridge on the sidewalk and I was just very intrigued about what it was and what it did. I hadn't heard anything about it happening in Philly. I think this is when it was still pretty new. So some areas of New York and LA had started some, but it was very early in the movement. I was in the midst of trying to plan a community garden at my school. And then I rolled across this and kind of had the two ideas of if we did start a community garden, you know, we could also put some of the excess food into the refrigerator. And then from there, it was just a lot of building up from the ground. And at that point, there were a few other that were starting in Philly, the one in West Philly and South Philly, but no one had officially started one yet. So it was a lot of just kind of figuring it out as you go. I had to make a lot of decisions that I wasn't, I had no idea if they were right or not. And we've had to adjust and make a lot of changes throughout the last year, but essentially that's how it started.
Though Jane is the driving force behind the Germantown Fridge, she's quick to credit community members around her with helping to build it up.
Yeah. So right now at this point, I have like a team of people that I meet with like biweekly, but when I was first starting, it was just me and I didn't really know where to start. So I just made an Instagram for it and kind of networked the old fashioned way and just kind of like texted some people that I knew, even just like parents of old students of mine that I knew lived in the Germantown area to try and say like, can you help just try and spread this idea? And then from there, I just put out like a couple like posts and stories saying like, hey, we're looking for a host location. We're looking for some people who have carpentry experience, because I definitely had none of that, to build a shed, because I knew I wanted a shed around the fridge. And it just happened to also be that my husband and I were moving into our first home that summer. There was a refrigerator there, and I happened to just ask my husband if we could use that one and just buy a new one for our house. And so that's the one that ended up being the first fridge at the Armat location. So I really relied on community members right from the beginning, the people who came to build the shed, move the fridge, paint the fridge, plug it in. I reached out to a local Germantown electrician who set up an outdoor outlet. I reached out to my school who was, they were gracious enough to allow us to have it at their location, which was really, really nice too. So it was really, it was a community effort, definitely. For lack of a better word, I think I was ignorant enough to not know what I was really getting myself into. So it was, I couldn't really plan. So we kind of just figured out as we went. And I actually found that Germantown ended up being a perfect spot for it. We have a really good core group of community members here that I feel like rally around each other. And that's what would work well for a community fridge. And then as I explored a bit more into like organizations that could make some more regular food donations, because it's hard to keep the fridge stocked if it's only based off of community members or neighbors coming here and there to drop off, which is great, but it's not gonna, you know, the fridge gets emptied pretty quickly. So as I reached out to more organizations like in the Germantown area and even Mount Airy and Chestnut Hill, I found that there were a lot that were willing to help out, like bakeries, restaurants, churches, and places like that, which when I talk with some of the other locations, they told me like, there aren't many places that can do that for us. So it ended up working out really well that Germantown was where we started it.
I was surprised to learn that Jane was also a newcomer to the idea of mutual aid when she started the Germantown Fridge. However, in her time running the fridge, she's gained some really important insight about the relationship between a community and the unique kind of mutual aid it needs.
When I first started, I don't think I actually knew the term mutual aid. As I've gotten to get to know the community and seen all the different mutual aid efforts, it's really amazing to see how perfectly the fridge really does fit in with that. You know, I think mutual aid is as simple as the words that make it up, right? It's just aiding one another and really like tapping into the power of those around you, especially your community members. And it feels a lot more direct and tangible because it's with your community members and there's this sense of looking out for one another. I can't say that I knew that what was going to happen when this fridge came. I think so much of the mutual aid and like community relations that came with it came as such a pleasant surprise. I think I was really naive when I started and I was just like, oh, a fridge on the sidewalk. And, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic and free food shouldn't be a radical idea. And, you know, everyone should be able to do it and it'll be simple, right? And there's this element of trust, right? Because it's 24/7. There's no one ever guarding or policing what you can take or what you can't take. And it's like it's local. It feels close knit. And it's essentially just helping one another out, right? It's not because you get a tax break because if you donate money, or it's not because a company needs to use like X amount on like charitable work, right? Right. There's a saying with mutual aid that it isn't charity. We're all just looking out for one another and our well-being. And when you bring a whole community together, I feel like you really tap into what everyone has to offer or not even offer. It's like the great things and the messy things, but that's part of every community, I feel like.
Given the idea that the community fridge can't operate without the support of neighbors, I asked Jane about the guardrails and support that exists in order to make sure the fridge still functions.
I hate to like say like there's always like a monetary element to it. So people who have been donating just through like the Venmo and Cash App, and I've been like floored by how much people are willing to just donate to support a cause. I mean, we're not a nonprofit. So even when we ask for food donations, like I can't ask places like Acme, Giant, Trader Joe's, because they only donate to nonprofit organizations. So the money that we get that's purely donated from community members will use to like buy the shed material. I'll try and do some grocery runs, like have community members who do some grocery runs and reimburse them each week. If I know it's a day where we don't get that many deliveries, we have a local HVAC refrigerator person who comes twice a year just to make sure the fridge is okay because it's outdoor and technically shouldn't be outdoor. We also had a 6-month celebration where we gave away a lot of other things that weren't food related, like hygiene products, baby items, all that. So whenever we need to use a little bit with that, that's the money that we use. The school and the church is gracious enough to pay for the electricity that the fridge is plugged into. And then we also have people who sign up for daily wellness check-ins. So each fridge should have like an AM and a PM volunteer. We have like a sign-up genius. And when they go, we have like a volunteer box with a lock box that has paper towels, cleaning supplies, gloves, and it's just their job to make sure like nothing crazy's happened. Text me a picture so I can just update people on what's in the fridge, make sure the temperature is okay, things like that. That's kind of been like the hardest to get a consistent amount of volunteers. I think any organization finds maintaining volunteers consistently is pretty hard. So we're reaching out to like different schools and church organizations too, which I think can help with that process. Just because then it's like there's structure to it. You know, there are a lot of things we've changed. We've had to replace the fridge at RMAT. And it's like crazy. We posted about it. We said that, I don't remember what the refrigerator term was. Something wasn't working in there. And we're like, we need a raise for a new fridge. And we got the people funded it within a day for us to buy a new fridge. You know, we started off with cabinets for our pantry that were just open. And then we realized that's an awful idea because there are rodents and we're outside. And so we switched over to a metal closed pantry. There's always things that happen every once in a while, but even when I talk with community members about it, it's like those events that happen or someone who messes with the fridge, it's usually like they're really in the minority. It's like they're in the 1%, you know, and then there's always people around who help clean up the mess or help replace the broken part. And so that's always really, really encouraging too.
When I asked Jane to tell me some personal stories of the people she interacted with, she said there were far too many to count.
I feel like I'm at an award show where I have to like remember all their names. So I'm not going to say all their names because just in case I forget someone. even the school and the church, the community members are definitely hands down the best people that you meet. Just like the people around Germantown that like, honestly, you might have not had a chance to talk to for any other reason. And then all the different like organizations too that have helped out. Like the bakeries in like Chestnut Hill and, you know, Germantown, and just like realizing bakeries and a community fridge pantry are a perfect combination because they can't sell day olds, right? All the schools around in the area of people who have reached out to me and said like, can we do like a drive to help support the fridge? Like Saturdays are always really crazy at the fridge because all the organizations that are like getting boxes for like giveaways, when they have extra boxes, a lot of places don't have somewhere to store it. So they're kind of stuck with that leftover food at the end of the day. And so a lot of them will swing by the fridge and drop those things off. So I don't know. I don't know if I have like a really specific story. I feel like I just have a lot of really small stories that feel big all in one. And I couldn't have imagined all the people that like we would have met and been connected to and talked to, even like the farms nearby and the farmers markets. That's something that I definitely couldn't have foreseen or was not planning for when I was saying I wanted to start a community fridge. So it truly is like a community effort.
As always, I asked what kind of impact Jane wants to have on the community around her.
I hope that the fridges are always a place where someone can count on having something to eat. I hope that the fridges are a place where a lot of people or farms or organizations who have excess feel that they can drop off and realize it's as easy as just putting it in a fridge versus throwing it out. Like one person can't do this and it's not sustainable. And it also defeats the purpose if it's only one or even if it's just 10 people who are doing it. You know, it's not just me and the 6 or 7 people I have on my team. You need the school to be on board, right? And you need the community members to be on board. You need the community organizations to be on board. So I hope that the impact is that whether you're a big organization, whether you're a community member, a neighbor who just needs food, that there's a role that fits in at the community fridge, even if you're dropping off extra food that you have or picking up a meal. I think everyone and anyone can be involved.
Finally, if you want to give support to or receive support from the Germantown Community Fridge, please listen to the following options.
On the base level of things, if you ever just want to go and grab food or you ever want to just go and donate food, anyone can do that whenever they want. There are a lot of people who still email and say like, hey, I have this. Can I drop it off? And I say, sure, you can pick either location. It's 24/7. You can drop it off in the morning, afternoon, night, whatever you want to do. If you want to be involved a little bit more and do like check-ins, or if you're interested in like picking up food or things like that, I would say a lot of it goes through our Instagram, but I also, which is at Germantown Fridge, but I know a lot of people also don't use that. So our email is also germantownfridge@gmail.com if anyone has any questions about that too. And like I said, we're always looking for people who want to be more involved and help out. So we also have a website, it's germantowncommunityfridge.com. So that also would have the information as well.
Once again, the Germantown Community Fridges are located outside the Green Street Friends School on Armott Street and outside the First United Methodist Church of Germantown on High Street. I'd like to thank Jane Ellis for talking to me, and I'd like to thank you, the listener, for tuning in to this installment of Neighborly Chats. My name is David Juro, and you've been listening to WRGU-LP, 92.9 FM.
Thanks for joining us. My name is Tom Cassetta. I am the station manager from 92.9 WGGT-LP, G-Town Radio. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.